We said on the first show that we would sell the ad spot for a dollar, and then we'd sell it to the next person for a dollar, and then to the next person for a dollar, and we'd run the ad as long as it goes. Well, eventually we hit a point where the CPM no longer makes any more sense. The CPM is the cost per mile. It's how much you're paying per listener. The average, there's a lot of different averages, but let's say the average is like $25 per 1,000 listeners. We have now reached the point with our listeners that if people continue to bid on our ad, it's now not really worth it, technically. They'd be doing it to help us out, I think, more than themselves at this point, which is nice, and we appreciate that.
I'm waiting for the other shoe to drop.
So we've decided that what we'll do is once we get an ad for 3 successive shows, we're going to hit the reset button. We're going to reduce the cost of the ad back down to a dollar. That's where it is today. You can buy the Misplay ad for a dollar right now.
Sounds like a steal.
That is actually a really good deal. But eventually it scales up where it's not a good deal anymore. That's just math. Now, if we grow our show, then, you know, $6 is a steal, $7 is a steal, $10 could be a steal. But at the moment, it's not. And we don't want to.
We're not in the world of price gouging.
I'm Hunter Pence, and you're listening to the Misplay Podcast. Oh, yeah.
Hello, and welcome to the Misplay, where we don't know if we are working in person or on Zoom. My name is Mark.
My name is Jason. That's a shot at me, right?
I mean, I did sit outside your house for 20 minutes last night.
Did you text me? You did text me. I was asleep. I had fallen asleep watching Fallout.
I was 2 minutes away from leaving and just going home.
Mark and I had set up a time to work, but we hadn't made it clear that I thought it was going to be online. He thought it was going to be in person. So he's outside my house. And then I had fallen asleep after pushing back the time from 9 to 10. So all kinds of mistakes on my end. I'm sorry about that.
It's okay.
Where are we?
We're staying in the realm of Starcrossed Realms.
Go on.
Talking about it a little bit, we've spent a little bit less time playtesting. I think the playtesting that we have done has been really valuable, but it has also been a little bit more limited than, say, the playtesting that we've had the opportunity to do for MMA Gauntlet.
Yes.
And what some of that has revealed to us is, for me, and I think for Peter, I'll be so bold as to try speaking, to maybe guess at what he's thinking.
Okay.
He and I have a very clear vision for the game.
I want to believe that's true, but go on.
I don't think the vision has translated very well to you.
It has not.
And so where that has kind of left us is, one, trying to do a little bit better job of translating the vision for Starcrossed Realms to you so that we can work more collectively on it. But two, what it has kind of shown us is Starcrossed Realms is kind of this current collection of disparate pieces. We have attraction, we have enthusiasm, we have what we called previously provoke and response, which are going to have to undergo some name change. We have that we think it's a deck builder, we think it's a collaborative game. There may or may not be a role-playing component to it. There may or may not be a social deduction component to it. And so what's kind of happened is we have this, do you remember, this is going to be like a high school chemistry reference. We have this kind of plum pudding model of Starcrossed Realms. You know what I'm talking about?
Not at all.
You might have to scrap this.
No, go on. Plum pudding.
Plum pudding model. There's a nucleus, like the center, which we'll call kind of the vision and the central idea of Starcrossed Realms. And then you have kind of all of the stuff around it. And it was kind of an imprecise model for what an atom looks like in the structures and the way that an atom works. So what we need to do is we need to refine from bread pudding to a more accurate atomic model for Starcrossed Realms. And so that's where we are today.
Well,
I'll send you pictures on Instagram.
I wonder how many people that made sense to. There's a few people who are probably preparing for their SATs right now and are like, oh yeah, no, that makes total sense. I understand what they're doing. I'm going to need visuals.
I'll send you a picture.
Thank you.
And we'll try to verbally paint a picture today.
We're going to try. That was kind of the idea last episode, but I'm not sure I was able to do that for anybody.
I don't know. Based on feedback in Discord, it seemed like there were a lot of ideas and suggestions and resources shared in Discord that Peter's actually already used some of. There was a new feature for designing card layouts that makes the cards look really nice on playingcards.io. So I think there's something to it. There is some amount of vision. There is some amount of engagement. There is something to sink your teeth into that we can then work on.
So Mark and I, we played the game this week. Mark and I play tested. We're going to talk about that. But before we start, this week's episode is brought to you by Koenig Creations. Koenig Creations is a print and play design studio that seeks to make accessible, fun games that are easy to print. Here's what I'm going to ask of you today. Head over to their website at koenigcreations.com, K-O-E-N-I-G, K-R-E-A-T-I-O-N-S, creations with a K.com. Sign up for the newsletter. We've talked before about how important this is for growing a business. Give them your email. They're not going to send you lottery spam. They're not going to try to send you tech support spam. They're going to send you things you're already interested in. How do I know that? You're listening to our podcast.
One of us.
While you're there, check out the rest of their print and play games on their website, Koenig Creations. Easy to print, easy to play.
I just signed up for the newsletter.
Nice. What are we working on?
Our playtest last night was short, right?
Yes.
We were short on time.
Short on decisions.
But again, it was revealing of things that we're missing that have started coming up. And what we talked about last night was, well, here are the things that are missing. What are possible solutions? And that's what we're going to spend some time sharing with today.
And I'll start. And the thing that I had said to Mark, the thing that what was missing is when you and I sat down to play Supermarket Game and when we sat down to play MMA Gauntlet, it was very clear what the objective was and how you can win that and what you needed to do to win that. In MMA Gauntlet, I needed to knock your characters out. In Supermarket Game, you needed to check out and there were ways to check out. In MMA Gauntlet, there are ways to attack and knock out your opponent. And right now in StarCross Realms, there isn't a way to win. We have all of these pieces. And I think that has been the challenging part for me, right? We have enthusiasm. We have the idea of attraction, but attraction isn't in the game yet. And so for me, it's been like really hard to kind of like try to understand where you and Peter see this game going. Because right now, I feel like I'm turning a card over. You're asking a question. I'm responding to it. You're no longer provoking me, which is good. You don't want to provoke me on the date. But now I feel like I'm in it with you guys. And I can now start trying to give you ideas and give you my thoughts and help us get to a point where there is a feeling of I'm making decisions that matter, rather than I'm just playing the card that's in my hand because I have to play a card and I only have one in my hand, so I'll play this one. So yesterday we played on playingcards.io. The cards had been updated by Peter. The UI on the screen had changed. So I got to play it for the first time, but now I was actually controlling it. I was flipping the cards. I was drawing the cards. I was discarding cards. I was playing a question or I was playing a response. So I'm starting to understand what the scene looks like. You compared it in the last show to a couple of other deck builders where there's, you know, a group of cards out in front of you. There's cards that you're discarding. You're trying to build a hand so that your future turns can be better than your basic initial turns.
One of the things we ran into really quickly in this playtest was we were stuck on this singular interaction of I happen to have character traits. My starting deck didn't have any questions. And so we were stuck in kind of an unfortunate loop where Jason was required to kind of be the leader and ask a question, but I had no way to continue the chain because responses close chains. And so we were stuck in this really short loop. And since the way that we had designed the Biro initially was the person who continues the chain gets a chance to buy a card. Jason was left unable to buy cards for the first round, which I think you expressed was frustrating.
We had both played a card, but you got rewarded for playing yours, even though I was like forced to doing the thing you couldn't do, and you got a bonus from it, and I didn't understand.
We're also coaching Jason on accepting this is going to, at least in the initial builds, is going to have a collaborative component to it. Jason, I think you're stuck in kind of like, I'm going to beat Mark at dating. So we got stuck in this kind of punishing sequence of chains for Jason. And in light of that, I think where that has pointed us is we kind of have three large things that need to be answered while we work on kind of the next step in the design of the game. The first is, I really do believe in the chain as the mechanism for playing cards, as kind of the defining feature of this game as a deck builder. Given the things that we've talked about that we don't enjoy about deck builders, we want to remove that solitaire component and we want this interactive component. And I'm going to pull an example to put it in context for you and maybe other listeners who have played other games. If you think about Magic the Gathering, when you're having a fight over spells in Magic the Gathering, I cast my first spell. Jason says, I play control, so I want to say no. Jason plays a card that prevents me from doing that.
It's on the stack.
It's on the stack. I play my counter that counters Jason's counter, and then Jason casts a removal spell on my unit. And that chain of interaction is really interesting. And so I really do believe we're interacting, like it's Magic is competitive, but that's the kind of interaction that we want in the game.
Except you want me to pump up your unit, and then you want to say, no, 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 let me pump it up.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm pumping it up better though, right?
Sure.
Okay.
Your card happened to give us more enthusiasm.
Which you got.
I'm going to propose something that I think will alleviate that for you. Let's look at that Magic the Gathering stack and let's make the change. We're done talking about stack. We're going to switch to talking about Starcrossed Realm language. We're going to continue to call it chain for now. So now in our Starcrossed Realms chain, what are the components of what we want a chain to look like? And Peter has talked a lot about how the game is designed to imitate conversation and like actions you could take on a date. So for me, I'm starting to think of the chain as it requires three pieces or three basic pieces. A chain requires someone to start the chain, an opener, if you will. It requires continuation and interaction in some capacity. The updates that Peter has kind of brought in that I would label as continuations are currently called dig, where you're looking for more information to continue your conversation. Confession, where you're divulging new information, and riff. Riff has its own kind of mechanical identity, but those three additions are what I would consider kind of the continuations in your chain. And then you would have something that closes or ends the chain. And what has started to kind of come into my mind is, well, the longer chain you build, the more you and your partner should be paid off, right?
Right.
So I think the goal of a round being synchronous or a shared round where we take our turn kind of simultaneously and reset simultaneously was something that we were trying to do to save time originally. But I think it also has kind of contributed to the difficulty of how do we make buying accessible to both people? So what I've been thinking about is what if it's a turn-taking style of round where you start the round, so you get to be the opener, and then we play our chain, and that chain then is going to give us some amount of enthusiasm. And then as the opener, the person who started the chain...
And enthusiasm is our version of gold, the economy, the thing you'll need to buy the better cards.
Yes, enthusiasm is the currency of the game. Attraction, which we're going to get to in a little bit, is what we're loosely defining as the victory condition right now. But we want to reward players for building long chains. That's kind of the goal. So when Jason starts his chain, say our chain is seven cards, there's some enthusiasm payoff. And then Jason gets to go to the buy row as the person who started the chain. And the person who starts the chain is the one who buys for that turn. After you do your buy, you add your cards to your deck as you would for a regular deck builder. You buy your cards from the buy row, you put them in your discard pile so that they're ready when it's time to reshuffle and draw your new hand. Now that your turn is done, it's my turn. I start a chain, and then we have the same exchange.
And the piece for me that I am trying to understand better is how we make those decisions. Currently, you just play whatever's in your hand if you can play it. There needs to be something where me choosing to play this card is a good strategy move. There also needs to be me not playing this card is a good strategy move. I have to have control over how this game is going to be played. And otherwise, it feels like we're just playing war, where I'm just flipping, I just flip over the card. It's a seven. Great. You got an eight, you win.
Tell me more. You and I have played a lot of Star Realms. Star Realms does not have decisions in the way that you're describing it.
They have decisions in the way you buy. There are some decisions in the cards where you can choose to play certain aspects of the card. You can either blow up the card to get a big effect immediately. The order in which you play the cards does matter, but most of the strategy is choosing what to buy from the row.
I think the question then becomes, where do we want to put the decisions in Star-Crossed Realms? Do we want to put it in the buy row? And I think there's room, depending on how we develop the chain, I think there is room to put in sequencing that's really meaningful in the way that we play our cards in our chain, whether it's finding ways to navigate around mishaps that are features of the game right now. Where are we going to put the decisions is kind of the question about how to approach the chain. Because like you mentioned in Star Realms, the strategy really is in the deck that you build, the engine that you create to create your damage output. So I think there's a world where we could put heavy weight of the decisions in the buy row in Star-Crossed Realms, our game, or you could continue to kind of focus on the chain and look for ways to modify, play with, adjust, manipulate, and control the factors of a chain, which for me on like first gut impression is where I would want to put some of the decisions. We want the decisions within a chain to be weighted in a meaningful way. I think we also want to have a way for each player to kind of build a strategy from creating their deck, because I think that's part of the appeal of deck builders. But as we build those strategies, I think we want to build in mind with the different strategies, maybe manipulate the chain in different ways.
I love the term that you've come up with, meaningful sequencing. I have to just remember where we're at. We are still, what this game is going to look like, it's going to be nothing like what we're doing right now, I imagine.
Probably not. I think it's taking a lot of the interesting and compelling puzzle pieces or game components that Peter has created and putting them into a structure that will translate well into the genre and meet kind of the genre, the length, and the other factors of how we want the game to play and what we want the gameplay experience to be.
And then so the chain was the first thing. That was the first thing that we said, this is really important. We do have to figure this out. Meaningful sequencing. The second thing is how to manage adding cards to the deck. In order to do these sequencing things, we need to have more advanced cards. We have to come up with a way that is interesting. It has to feel like I am making a meaningful choice. And in Star Realms, it's an open market in front of you. And then you are trying to see which ones you can buy. You have to like pick and choose which ones you want based on what your opponent is doing.
And based on the currency that you accrue in the hand that you play.
Right. Currently, you're thinking something along the lines of whoever starts the chain is then going to get the enthusiasm and then they can spend that for their next round.
Yeah. As kind of a review and something that we as the design team will have to address is enthusiasm in its original design for this game was set to be a fluctuating score that was kind of always constant, which really does depart significantly from the way that a typical deck builder would play. I think it'd be worth our time to explore. Do we want to try to continue with enthusiasm as this kind of static fluctuating score that's ever present? Or do we want to try, and I think we should try both, where we turn enthusiasm into a more traditional kind of currency that you would see in your typical deck builder? Your money, your resources, your energy, your whatever.
Right, where you spend it and then you build it back up again. The situation I ran into yesterday was you told me enthusiasm one is a secret, so you don't know what my enthusiasm is, but it was my turn to flip a card to get a new card. And you told me if the number in the top left-hand corner is equal to or lower than my enthusiasm, then I can buy it. And it was exactly my enthusiasm. And you're like, you can buy it. I'm like, why wouldn't I buy it? I don't have any choice here. I've looked at one card. I can buy it. Why would I ever say I don't want it? I would have been really disappointed if I flipped it over and it was higher than my enthusiasm and I couldn't buy it. Then it was like, that's it. I didn't do anything.
And that is a really good example that brings us back to our biro question. What does the biro need to look like? What do we want the biro to accomplish? And what is going to be the functional biro that gives us your meaningful decisions and preserves, I think what I would argue is some of the charm of the hidden information piece. The biro originally wasn't a row. It was originally just a deck that you would draw cards from. I think our first playtest, we drew 3 cards. And when you were buying, you could choose from the 3. In the second version that we tried where you only drew 1 and had an option of yes or no. I think now, like looking back and comparing and seeing kind of the way that your and my playtest went, I do think we want to go back to having more options to buy from. I don't think the amount of reading on the cards will be the barrier that we have to concern ourselves with. The charm, I think, of this game is some of that hidden information piece where your partner doesn't know what you've added to your deck yet because it has that like suspense quality to it, or that like anticipation of, ooh, they unlocked a new thing that they're going to share later, which I do think is part of the charm of the game. If you look at a more traditional deck builder, Star Realms, Dominion, and others, the biro is face up. Everybody knows what everybody else is buying. I think what I would love to explore and what I've been spending time thinking about is how do we preserve the charm of the hidden information, but have the variety and the ability to have a biro that allows when we get to developing the strategies, how can I use the biro and design the biro in a way that the information can remain hidden, but players are still able to build a cohesive strategy?
One of the games that you and I have always liked playing is called Winston Draft in Magic. And we have 90 cards in the middle in a pile. And what we do is we set down 3 piles. Then you look at the first one. You look at the card. You can either take it or you can set it back down, take a card from the pile, the main pile, and put it on top of that card face down. You don't know what it is. And then you can look at the next pile, the second one of the 3. You look at it and maybe you take that one and you say, okay, I want to play with that card. So you put it with your cards and then you put a card blind down into the middle. So of the 1, 2, 3, 4 cards on the table that can be chosen, you only know one of them for sure. You know the one card in that first pile. So the first pile's got 2 cards, so it's my turn. I get to look at both of those cards, and I also say, no, I don't want these cards. I put the 2 cards back, I take a card off the main pile and put it face down. There's now 3 cards in that first pile. And it becomes a point where you're almost incentivized to take the bigger pile because it's just value at that point. Winston is a really interesting way to think about this.
I agree. I'm thinking about it because I think it's cool. I think it also accomplishes a couple of other things that you've identified that the game needs. Having cards that stay allows for an amount of planning to develop a specific strategy for your deck. There's also a component where if some of the cards do stay, we maintain some of that charm and the anticipation of, ooh, what did they buy? Like, I know that some of these things are on the table, but maybe they took like the brand new card that's there. And so I think that might actually be a really nice solution to maintaining some amount of hidden information, but also allows kind of this neat way of sharing information with your partner, person you're playing with, pal,
date.
Because now, like, if I don't want card number 1 and I add to that pile, but I do want card number 2. Now I know, like you explained, I know 50% of what's in pile 1. And then when you buy, like Maybe it is buy one card from that thing now. Like, oh, we need to accommodate, because you don't just in a deck builder. I'm starting to think there are departures. There are lessons we can learn from Winston, but I don't think you're going to have the same growth of piles the way that you would in the Magic game that we would play. But I do think it is an interesting answer to some of the early questions that we've come into about the buy row.
Let me ask you this question. From a player standpoint, hidden information is good in a game where I'm playing against somebody. I don't want them to know what I have. It's always fun in Winston when, you know, I drop a bomb on the table. You're like, oh, I never saw that card. I didn't know you had that one. Why in a game that's cooperative do you want hidden information?
I think two reasons for this game. One, Peter kind of explained how the hidden information piece fights the quarterbacking problem. If you don't know what I have, you can't tell me what to play.
That's true.
Because we're a team, Jason.
Yeah, right.
We're working together on this date.
Sure we are.
You're paying for dinner.
I walked in, I saw you, I was out immediately. But I'm going through the motions because I'm trying to be nice.
It hurts. I shaved. I'm like wearing my nice glasses. The hidden information piece avoids some of the more experienced player just dictating to the less familiar player what to do.
And I like that as an answer. You know I do.
The other piece I do think comes back to kind of the flavor and the vision of the game. You want that little bit of anticipation. You want that little bit of suspense of, ooh, like, okay, we just had a really high enthusiasm chain and they bought the first card that they saw. Was it an expensive one? Was it a good one? Was it something that's particularly interesting to their strategy? And then you're like excited. You want to like tease that out. So you want to find a way to help them play that card. And so it feeds into this anticipation state that's kind of one of those defining characteristics of kind of the romance genre, and still maintains kind of the playfulness of it, the interest, the intrigue, and the social deduction if you want it.
I like the connection to theme. When you're on a date, you just don't know what the other person's thinking. So chain was one. How to manage adding cards is two. Number three that we kind of highlighted yesterday when we were playtesting was, how does the game end?
You run out of time with the person that you're playing with and you say, oh, well, time to go. That's what it is right now.
Mark keeps telling me that attraction is how you win the game. There's nothing on these cards that say attraction yet because it's not in the game.
I don't think that's entirely true. Go read the card file.
The rules?
No, the card file.
Now there's card files?
No, you got to go read all the cards. You've read all of the basic cards and none of the other stuff.
Okay. Probably true.
So yes, attraction is underrepresented in the game right now. Agree. One of the other things that I've been thinking about the end game and attraction, in Dominion, another deck builder, the goal is to convert your currency into victory points. I think for this game, Star-Crossed Realms, it's a very intuitive leap to say there is a rate that you can exchange enthusiasm for attraction. Can we go from currency to victory points? That is a way, like Dominion. Or if we had some other solution where there are specific cards in the game that you can buy that then increase attraction, which is kind of where it is right now. Like mishap cards lower attraction in the game.
I'm still not sold on attraction as the victory point measure. For me, attraction is something that either exists or it doesn't. I don't become more attracted to you on a date when you start telling me about your pets. To me, it's this, and I could be looking at dates wrong. I could be doing it wrong. I'm willing to be wrong. But when I think of attraction, I just think of, it's very physical to me. And so if I go on a date, my attraction doesn't really change.
Say you go on a first date.
Sure.
You're like, this went great. How would you describe the quality or the characteristic or name the reason why you want to go on date number two? Oh, the word just popped into my head. I think I'm going to crush it.
Oh, don't tell me. Obviously, attraction still has to be there, but rapport?
I think yes, but I think that's very much less in kind of the dating sphere than the word that I'm thinking of.
What's the word you got?
Connection.
Oh, connection. Yeah, that makes sense.
You build connection.
You build connection. You don't build attraction. I like that. Now, attraction sounds cooler, though.
It's like, attraction does sound cooler, but it's also possible, like, what if attraction is supposed to be a different metric in the game? I think it was Leonie when we had her on talking about Biome. She said, whenever you have these moments of pulling something out from your game and putting something else in, don't just throw away the thing that you've taken out, because at some point you're going to come back to a state where maybe it makes sense to reintroduce that thing, or you're going to use it on a different game. Maybe we want to temporarily change our victory condition to connection. We don't want to forget about attraction.
Yeah, I really like connection. That is the thing you build. So regardless of what we call it, connection, attraction, victory points, we don't know yet how that metric's going to be measured, right? There could be just a flat thing. If we can get to, in our game, before the sixth round, whatever, we can get to 10 connection or attraction or victory points, then we win together.
Mm-hmm. So I think that piece is a little bit still undetermined, but I think for our working purposes now, I think arbitrary victory point score is our target end game. I'm going to arbitrarily say it's 12 right now, and we'll get back to it. Jason, I have a question for you.
Go on.
What's tomorrow?
Tuesday.
More specifically for work, what's tomorrow?
Promotion.
More specifically than just fifth grade.
Last day of school.
It's been a tough stretch getting to the end of the school year.
Yes.
I have some good news for you.
Okay.
I'm going on a little vacation on Wednesday.
Oh, good for you.
I have bad news for me.
Okay.
So that bad news first, then good news.
It's Connecticut.
Yeah. I'm going to Connecticut. The bad news for me is there's not a lot of dance fighting in Connecticut.
Okay.
And there's not a lot of places to go rock climbing in Connecticut, at least for where I am.
And Mark does not do anything else.
Well, the good news for you is I'm going to be looking for things to do while I'm away. And I think for what's next, you've talked about wanting to see more of this game. You need to be able to see it.
Yes, visual learner.
So what I think I'm going to have to do is, since I'm going to be looking for things to do, I'm going to put together a paper copy of a version of StarCross Realms for us to play when I get back.
I like it. Can I add that you don't just do it on a piece of paper and a pencil. You do it electronically and print it so that we can share it with other people too.
Hey, I did that with MMA Gauntlet. I'm working on it. It's okay. Coming along.
But I think us playing it just in person with paper cards is definitely going to... I love all the work that Peter has done. No question. We should definitely keep going on playingcards.io. I think that is going to be really great. For you and I in person, in this stage of the game, I think just physically playing it is going to be more beneficial.
I agree. Peter on the show last time was in favor of kind of the multiple points of entry to problem solving and designing. And so I think this is a logical next step. Playingcards.io has been really informative, and playing in paper will also be informative, because eventually, regardless of what game we make, whether it's StarCross Realms or MMA Gauntlet or...
Nightmare Smashers. Can I get you on it?
Put together an initial design.
Okay.
Regardless of what the game winds up being, the game will be pen and paper, hard copy. It's not going to be a digital game that we're designing. And so eventually we do need to be playing in paper in person on tables. The Misplay Podcast is brought to you by Mike C., Missy, JP Savard, Parney, Kyle Flowers, Ajos, Brian, and Bins. Consider donating at patreon.com/themisplay. If you'd like to become a featured sponsor of the show, find our FAQ in Discord. Your partner doesn't know what you've added to your deck yet, because it has that like suspense quality to it, or that like anticipation of, ooh, they unlocked a new thing that they're going to share later, which I do think is part of the charm of the game.
I think partner's even jumping ahead. I think it's a date.
Playmate? That's not a good way to put it either.
We're working on it.